Hello and welcome to Empowering Good Governance magazine. This is our podcast, Vauxhall, and we're here talking to Robert Freeman, who is a long experienced urban planner, or I'll say regional planner as well, with the region of East Tennessee. So Bob, welcome to Vauxhall.
Thank you.
And if I may say that, it may be said of you that you have a bird's eye view of the East Tennessee region, looking back and perhaps also going forward. You served as a director of the East Tennessee Development District for many a year. So I would like to ask you if you could please describe a bit more about yourself so we know who you are, as well as what you might describe the East Tennessee Development's purpose mandate to be.
Well, first of all, I graduated from the University of Tennessee with a degree in city planning. And while I was taking the city planning curriculum, I was working for the Tennessee State Planning Office as a local planner in the East Tennessee region, working with smaller towns mostly like Lenore City, Loudoun, Sweetwater, Sevierville, Pigeon Forge, Harriman, and towns of that size. In 1966, the East Tennessee Development District was created by the local governments under state law, and it was funded in 1967 mostly with federal funds through such agencies as the Appalachian Regional Commission, the Economic Development Administration, and several others. And a well-qualified, experienced director was hired, and then he asked me, because of my experience in East Tennessee already, to be the assistant director. So I accepted that job and moved from the state planning office to the East Tennessee Development District. Now, the East Tennessee Development District is a regional planning agency, essentially, composed of all of the counties, there are 16, and all of the municipalities within the East Tennessee Development District. The number of municipalities has varied over the years, of course. We started out with maybe 38 or so, but several more became incorporated, and at least one became disincorporated. So I think there are 46 municipalities at this time, or thereabouts. The mission of the East Tennessee Development District is to create a broad regional plan, number one, in covering mostly infrastructure such as highways, utilities, parks, recreation, things of that nature, libraries, and to assist the local governments and the special purpose units of government such as utility districts and nonprofit corporations on occasion to access federal and state funds. This typically consists of making some kind of application and using the expertise of the staff of the development district to put in the best applications possible, because all of these applications are competitive.
Okay. You mentioned earlier that there were a number of cities. You mentioned Pigeon Forge, among others. When you say the size of these particular cities, what are we talking about in terms of a size, in terms of population?
Well, the largest city in the region is Knoxville, which has a population of about 180,000. And the smallest cities have around 200 people.
200 people. Okay, so it's quite a range.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But basically from medium-sized cities going on downwards.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
The next largest city to Knoxville is has about 25,000, Maryville and Oak Ridge.
Okay,
right. Oak Ridge probably has 30,000, Maryville around 25,000, okay. Morristown around 23,000.
And as you know, the largest unit of government below the state level are counties. So East Tennessee Development District comprises of counties. So how many counties are in the East Development District?
16.
16, okay, good. And then you also made an interesting comment that there were a number of cities that were incorporated. And discuss something about the incorporation process. And then you also mentioned that one was actually disincorporated.
Yes.
Uh-huh. What would make a city that was incorporated be disincorporated, and who disincorporates that particular jurisdiction?
Well, that particular town that became a city at one point, mm-hmm. There was some illegality. It didn't comply with state law.
Okay.
So at some point, the state simply declared it no longer a city, no longer a municipality. It was one of those municipalities created to avoid having the area annexed by an adjacent city.
I see. So it was a preemptive move to try and arrest.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I see. And then, who at the state level does that? Is it the legislature?
No.
Or is it the governor? Who does it?
The courts.
The courts. I see. Okay. All right. And assuming that it's, I mean, not knowing that it's the courts, who brings the complaint to the courts? Is it the city trying to annex?
Yes.
Ah, interesting. Okay. Okay. And these courts are part of state government, not part of federal government. Are they part of local government?
These are the state courts,
which
typically are actually operated within each county or within a group of counties.
All right.
The Chancery Court, I believe, was the court that has the jurisdiction over that.
Good.
And the Chancery is actually, it's considered a state court, although most of the judges are elected within each county.
Uh-huh.
Or within a group of counties.
Good. That's what I was actually coming to next, is that the U.S. has a unique tradition of having judges be elected.
At the state level.
At the state level.
State and county level.
State and county level, they are elected.
Not federal judges.
Not a federal. Okay. All right. Got it. So now let's move on to another question. You discussed who you are. You discussed something about the East Tennessee Development District, commonly called ETED. And now, how would you describe or characterize the practice of governance as you've experienced it and learned about it over the years? As we just mentioned, there's a spectrum of governance, if not a hierarchy. It ranges from local government, that includes municipal and county government, to state government, which includes the state legislature, plus its administrative branches. For example, the Tennessee Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations, and for example, also the Tennessee Department of Transportation. And then onwards, we have the federal level, where we have agencies such as the Economic Development Administration, which is an agency, which is actually under the Department of Commerce. We also have a program like the CDBG, which is the Community Development Block Grant, which is a long-standing program that funds local government development. And then we also have other agencies like the EPA, which is a regulatory agency. Many people around the world would know what that means. Then, of course, as we discuss with the East Tennessee Development District, we have regional agencies like ETED and also the Tennessee Valley Authority. So how would you, please, if you could describe how you view this architecture of governance? You know, it's quite elaborate, and they all have to almost dance together to the benefit of the citizen.
Yes, it is. Now, of course, the development districts are created by the state.
Okay.
First of all, so they are essentially state-sanctioned agencies, although they're not state agencies.
Exactly.
They're not part of state. They're not a direct part of state government. They are governed by the mayors of each county within the region and the mayors of each city.
Exactly. So technically, they're almost like an association of governments who have willingly come together to be members of a group.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes they're called councils of government.
Okay.
Councils of local government. That sort of thing. Now, the Tennessee Valley Authority is a federally created agency covering portions of several states.
States, exactly.
Seven states, I believe, are the total number of states within that. Basically, it's the Tennessee River Valley.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And, of course, that was created in the 1930s.
Yes.
In order to promote economic development, alleviate flooding problems,
mm-hmm.
Generate electricity,
mm-hmm.
And
also to do resource management.
Be concerned with natural resources,
yeah.
And interestingly enough, make fertilizer.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
The Tennessee Valley Authority inherited a dam down in Alabama that was a fertilizer which had an adjacent, which in World War I created munitions, and they turned that into fertilizer production. Nitrates, nitrogen, and of course, the production of fertilizer fits right in with promoting agriculture.
So the
Tennessee Valley Authority is one of the, in this area of the United States was very instrumental in promoting the idea of local planning. Mm-hmm. They encouraged the state of Tennessee to set up a local planning office to provide direct assistance to the smaller cities. Larger cities would employ their own city planners.
Exactly.
Smaller cities didn't have the resources to do that, and that's what the Tennessee State Planning Commission was set up to do, agency that I worked with initially.
Exactly. Which then changed into the local planning office.
Yes.
And now the local planning office has been put back into another agency.
The development district.
back to the development district,
yeah,
I see.
When the state planning office was dissolved, the local planning division of the state planning office was dissolved, the various development districts throughout the state, and there are nine in Tennessee, picked up that service unless the locality wanted to employ its own planner.
Exactly.
Which some did.
All right. So, okay. So it's basically like a technical support agency for local governments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Realizing that some of the local governments don't have the capacity to have the staff and the resources to attend to their issues in and of themselves.
Yes.
So to speak. Okay. All right. So now let us delve a little bit further into utility planning. You know, as you said, TVA, not utility planning for now, but infrastructure planning. The East Tennessee Development District played quite a leadership role or a coordinating role with that. We mentioned earlier, for example, the CDBG program. So that again is the Community Development Block Grant Program that comes out of the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And that program, for example, funds utility and industrial development infrastructure across the country. Looking at the East Tennessee Development District, let us discuss how that particular program, the CDBG program, considers and funds, let's say, for example, the rural water line extension or the development of an industrial park.
The Department of Housing and Urban Development allocates funds to larger municipalities such as Knoxville, Nashville, et cetera, directly to those places, and then allocates a block grant, a big block grant, to the state of Tennessee. Okay, the state of Tennessee has an office which is responsible for distributing in a proper manner those funds to the smaller jurisdictions.
Mm-hmm.
So now the Community Development Block Grant Program is oriented towards low and moderate income people, providing services to low and moderate income people. So in order to qualify for a CDBG grant, a smaller town or county has to benefit primarily low and moderate income people with their proposal.
Mm-hmm.
So the development district may be called upon by a county or a city, a small city, to help them develop an application. Now, some small cities and counties can develop their own applications, and some might use consultants, but the development district staff is there to provide that kind of assistance if desired. And the application process consists of laying out what the proposal is, whether it's a water line, sewer line, creation of industrial park, and in some cases it may be other things like a senior citizen center, or a library, or a park, recreation, or whatever. We establish in the application that the proposal is to primarily benefit low and moderate income people, sometimes by using census statistics or sometimes by actually surveying each household that's going to benefit by, exactly, say, a water line or a sewer line, and wrap that up into as best of an application as can be developed on behalf of that city or county, and hope that it will be funded through the state office.
And the state office, when they make that decision, what criteria do they use? Do they use a committee to decide it? What will make one not get the money if, well, they put in an application?
There are almost always more applications to be funded, mm-hmm, than there is money to fund.
Exactly.
It.
So how do they prioritize who gets?
They use a point system.
Okay.
You know, you get the more low and moderate income people you have, mm-hmm, the higher number of points you get in that category.
Okay.
The more jobs that could be created, the higher number you get in that category.
Okay.
Et cetera. And then it's all these various points put together, and they fund the first...
The top five, the top, or the top ten,
so
or what
many,
have you.
To the point where the money runs out.
Exactly.
And then hopefully those that don't get funded might try to put in next year.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll get funded, and maybe they can do something to improve their application, mm-hmm, to get more points by maybe adding if it's a waterline extension, maybe there's a little low moderate income area over here they could add to it, and, mm-hmm, maybe there are too many wealthy people over here that benefited, mm-hmm, they could delete from it.
Exactly.
And create a better...
So now, if let's say we look at that one that is based on a point system, there has to be low income and other benefits like jobs. On that end, there is this competition to garner points or to build up your points. But when it comes to another form of federal funding for local government infrastructure or development, we can look at the issue of transportation. There, it seems to be it's more a negotiation between jurisdictions. Let's say, for example, road facilities need to be put into different parts of the county. And let's say one particular part of the county or one particular county got money for a particular road going that way. And now another county would then be the next in line because the first time around they didn't get the money. How would you characterize that system for transportation funds distribution?
Well, that's
as against the CDBG program, for example.
There are different pots of money,
yes,
for transportation.
Mm-hmm.
There's a small pot of money, for example, that the state has to provide to local jurisdictions for industrial access roads, for example.
Okay, mm-hmm,
okay, that's generally based on how many jobs are created, and when those jobs would be created, mm-hmm, and usually based on whether or not economic development proposal is going to go in now or not.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, funds are not used to develop industrial parks.
Mm-hmm.
Except to the extent that there's going to be a factory situated here, and they'll build a road up to that factory to connect with the major highway system. So that's one pot of money. Then of course there are numerous other pots of money: interstate funding, mm-hmm, primary highway funding, secondary highway funding, and numerous other small pots of money, which change all the time, and which I'm no longer familiar with some of those.
Sure, I understand.
Pots of money, but those are generally based on traffic needs.
Exactly.
More,
yes,
so than and of course, state highways, interstate highways, and secondary state highways are built directly by the Tennessee Department of Transportation. Those aren't monies that are allocated to local governments as such.
But the local governments have some input because a facility might drive through their jurisdiction.
A highway doesn't get improved. It takes 10 years, more or less, mm-hmm, for a decision to be made on any significant highway improvement. There are numerous public hearings, environmental impact statements. Everybody has a chance to comment,
mm-hmm,
yay and nay. And of course, local governments do advocate for improvements within their jurisdiction. Yes. So, and every means that a local government can use to get an improved road, they use
exactly.
Politics, justification based on need everything. Good. So. Some of the decisions are outright political, rather than more so.
But I've also noticed that there needs to be a lot of cooperation and negotiation, like jockeying for attention, jockeying for support. So that is, I think, a very important part of governance that most people don't actually understand. There's a lot of negotiation between. So if, let's say, we were to go further into the issue of utility infrastructure, and as you well know, because I did some work with you, I should also make the notification, a disclaimer, that we were once co-workers where you were my director and I worked with you at the East Tennessee Development District. Now, that having been said, one of the things that happened a lot was that there was a need for coordinating and negotiating cross-border agreements between utilities. Let's say, for example, one utility wanted to improve their water storage capacity. And there might be a sufficient or more than sufficient capacity in an adjoining county. So there might be a need to negotiate where that county that needs more water will get it from another county for the meantime, rather than federal dollars being spent to create another storage capacity that might not be needed at that capacity being requested as of the moment. So discuss something about how you and the development district worked with local governments to basically get along, to forge agreements that made for the smooth functioning for the different levels of governance, and say something about how, what makes it work, and how one must be careful to make sure it does not work.
That's one of the roles of the development district, was to try not to fund or recommend funding for or
the needless funding
or allow funding for superfluous facilities.
It's easy,
okay.
Yes.
And Dennis, I don't even remember now how many different water utilities there are. There must be about 100 different water utility systems within the East Tennessee Development District, and probably 60 sewer systems. And that's just a wild guess, because I really don't remember now.
Sure.
Of course, initially the water systems were, and the sewer systems would just cover a small city or a large city, and that would be it. But eventually, as growth occurs, the cities start running into each other.
Exactly.
and the water systems start running into each other, and that's where the coordination is needed. So to the extent feasible, we would always try, if a town had excess capacity, to try to get an adjoining community or utility district. We have a lot of utility districts that cover rural areas outside of cities, to simply buy water from the other jurisdiction. Avoid a lot of excess water treatment plants and excess storage plant facilities. And sometimes the negotiations work and sometimes they don't, but cost is always the big hang-up. A lot of times the utility that has excess supply wants to make a big profit out of it rather than a little profit.
Yes.
And that can generate a lot of hard feelings and disputes and the other utilities saying, well, no, we just need to build our own facility, even though there's plenty of excess water in the area.
So when it doesn't work, how does it get resolved?
Well, occasionally the utility, the East Tennessee Development District, might recommend that this system not get federal funding to do this because they don't really need it.
Yes.
They could buy it cheaper than they could build a new facility, mm-hmm. and that happened on a few occasions. On some of those occasions, the utility went ahead and issued bonds on their own to build a facility anyway.
Okay.
So these things don't always get resolved.
Exactly. Exactly. Do they ever go to court?
No, because hardly ever. One utility to go to court against another utility might occur only in a situation where utility A was already buying from utility B, and utility B wants to quit buying before the contract
is up. Exactly.
Because to go to court, you have to have standing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you're not already involved in a contract with an adjoining utility, mm-hmm. that the other utility is trying to negate,
mm-hmm.
There's no basis for standing.
Then let's also talk, let's make the clear distinction that we're talking about water and sewer utilities, not electrical utilities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the water and sewer utilities, some of them are owned by government, some actually even private, right?
There used to be several private water systems.
Mm-hmm.
By private, I mean investor-owned.
Exactly.
But I don't think there are currently in the East Tennessee Development District any more of those. It became so expensive. They were very small systems.
Exactly.
Now, there are, in some places, there are big investor-owned water systems, such as the city of Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Ah, okay.
The water system there is an investor-owned water system, not a city system. These smaller water systems that are investor owned were normally started in order to so somebody could create a small subdivision.
Exactly, small subdivision. Yes,
mm-hmm. And it became so expensive for the owners of those systems to continue operating with all of the requirements that they just simply sold their system to an adjoining utility.
Okay.
So to my knowledge, if there are any private systems left, they're extremely small,
mm-hmm.
and extremely remote.
Okay. All right. So lastly, I wanted to ask you if you have any parting words of advice or wisdom for being that you served several years in governance, particularly dealing with local government support. So if there's anything that you'd like to share with our listeners in terms of, you know, don't do this, be mindful of that, be wary of this, and always do this for the benefit of the good of what you're trying to achieve.
Well, one of the interesting things that's happened since I started working in the area,
mm-hmm.
both with the local planning office and later the East Tennessee Development District, is the extent to which municipal governments have become more professional. In other words, when I first came here, there were very few people that you would call city administrators or city managers who were professionally trained. Academically trained, mm-hmm. or had experience or whatever.
Exactly.
But more and more towns have instituted such a system.
Mm-hmm.
And even the city of Knoxville used to be very, very badly run by questionably trained people, mm-hmm. shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
But the city government of Knoxville, even though it's a strong mayor system,
mm-hmm.
Has employed in the last 40 years at, mm-hmm. least, well-trained people within the head of various departments.
Exactly,
generally.
Mm-hmm.
City of Morristown created a city manager system maybe in the early 60s, the city, mm-hmm. of Maryville in the late 60s, and both those cities have progressed substantially, mm-hmm. under that system.
How does a city manager function when there's an elected mayor?
Well, if you have a proper city manager system, the mayor is simply a sort of a figurehead.
Okay.
The city manager is responsible to the council as a whole.
Mm.
The mayor is simply the presiding officer of the council.
Council, I got it. Okay.
And goes to the ribbon cuttings, events and that sort of thing. And
it's similar to the president and prime minister systems in some countries. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But the city managers are always hired and appointed. They're never elected.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a real city manager, real city administrator, or sometimes they're called city administrators,
mm-hmm.
is hired by the council as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they hire a qualified person. That doesn't have it. Doesn't always happen. But hopefully they do.
Mm-hmm.
And he is responsible, he or she is responsible to the entire city council. We have two well qualified, extremely well qualified women, for example, longtime city managers mm-hmm. in the cities of Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I should try and go up there and talk to them as well. Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg are cities on the outskirts of Knoxville, let's see. They're in a different county, Sevier County.
Yeah.
And they are very wealthy by virtue of the fact that they are heavily tourist derived economies. For example, Dolly Parton's amusement park is in the area, among other things. And seemingly these two female city managers are doing a lot.
Yeah, Mrs. Ogle is, I believe she's been city manager maybe 25 years.
Oh, wow.
And Mrs. Teaster in Pigeon Forge, probably 40 years.
40 years, oh, wow.
And she's worked for the city for 55 years.
Oh, wow, okay.
Or maybe a little longer. She's worked for the city for 57 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
She started as secretary.
Oh, wow.
And she does not have training in being a city. She does not have academic training in
exactly,
being a city manager. She just learned it.
She has a wealth of experience,
yeah.
though, and therefore a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah. She went through, she served under as secretary to the city
mm-hmm.
when it first started, and then she served under six or eight city managers.
Mm-hmm.
And then they finally decided she was the best person.
Person, exactly.
And hired her probably 40 years ago as the city manager.
Well, well done to the city for having done that. Well done to them. Well, Bob, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's always good to see you.
I hope. Yeah, thank you for that too. Likewise. And maybe we'll come and revisit another topic another day. But we very much thank you for your participation. To wrap up, this has been Vauxhall on the Empowering Good Governance magazine platform. We can be found at www.eggmagazine.net. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to having you be listeners on our other broadcasts. Bye-bye.